board to some of the industry's most successful individuals with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them, is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us.
Can I call you back, please?
The premier place to breed.
At the races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. I got about 45 minutes to close out here, hour three, and just heard from Nick. He's actually packing. He's got to go to Dallas, and so he's going to beg off, but he will catch up with us later in the week and maybe slip in. He's going to maybe slip in a play of the day to send you off into the summer or into the fall happy, and we'll talk to Hammer in a little bit and John Sadler as well. Right now, though, we'll go down to Oceanport. They are racing, of course, today at Monmouth, and Frank Miramonte joins us within a few hours, really, of the news that Frank will become the voice of Saratoga Racecourse in 2023, and about as enviable a pair of gigs in an announcer's booth as there is in the game, Saratoga Summers, Santa Anita, Winter and Spring, and Frank, congratulations.
Thank you so much, Steve. You've been a big supporter of mine from day one, and I appreciate your kind words, and certainly I appreciate the kind sentiments from everyone around the country. I've had an incredible response on my phone yesterday. I basically was just having to say quick thank yous and move on to the next one because it was just overwhelming. But I had a chance to talk to some very special people that have helped me along the way, some employers that were there for me through good and bad times, and it's been very fulfilling to be able to, you know, express my gratitude to those people who have put me in this position right now.
How did this? I mean, you've come to New York and spot called for gosh, how many years now? Actually,
started in 2017. As a matter of fact, the end of 2017, I left my position at Golden Gate Fields to basically share the meet at Aqueduct with John Imbrial. And I want to say that, first of all, I wish him nothing but the best, but he's going to continue as the voice of Belmont Park. So it's no goodbye. It's just that he's scaling back his work. He's going to continue to call Belmont, and Chris and I are going to call the rest of the year. But I can say this about John, one of the classiest people I've ever come across, both in and outside of racing. And from the moment I went to work, and basically he decided the schedule that I would work at Aqueduct in the 2017-2018 season. And he picked the dates. And I could just tell from the way he picked the dates, he gave me so many exciting and prestigious races to call. And then he allowed me to call the Cigar Mile, which was something he always liked to do. And I almost fought him a little bit on that one Cigar Mile. I said, Johnny, I know you like the Cigar Mile. He goes, you do it, kiddo. That's just the way he is. And he set me up for success from day one. I've called a handful of days at Belmont Park. And this year I called a couple of days. I've called a total of 5 days at Saratoga. The day he let me call at Saratoga the first time and he wanted to take a little day off and a break, the Adirondack was the race. It's just the kind of guy he is. You know, it's like I looked at it like a field trip. Like, I can't believe I get to go and call the Adirondack. And I was doing a little bit of work on the TV show as well. And it's just it's been an incredible blessing, and I'm just so grateful. But Johnny has set me up for success from the beginning, and I know that he's very, very happy that they gave me this job, and I know that he basically did everything possible to help me land this, and I can never thank him enough. But this is how he is, a really good man. I think he's just, you know, continued to do a great job, particularly in the huge races. He shows just such a flair and passion. He's a true legendary New Yorker. A man who's given his life to NYRA, and a man who has the best interest of the New York Racing Association in his heart. And, you know, he's shown it in so many different capacities. And for him to want me in that spot and for him to help me like he did just means the world to me. It just makes it that much more special to have this chance. And they offered me the position when I was there a few weeks ago, and I'm very grateful for it. And needless to say, I accepted.
Unbelievable! It's just a one of those things that I will say. There had been earlier in the summer, Frank. There had been a rumbling. Somebody had said to me, "said you know, I heard something about Frank Miramonte." Really? I said, "Well," and it should have been. I should have been able to connect the dots about the summer because. You know, obviously the Santa Anita job is, you know, the lifelong dream. But, you know, for this to plug in, I mean, and certainly being at Monmouth is wonderful. But, I mean, Frank, arguably you've got the two choicest race calling jobs in the game. And as you referenced, you rolled the dice that time, you know, going after the Santa Anita job. And look where you are now.
I look. You know, my favorite book that I've ever read is Steve Crist, Betting on Myself. It's a
Betting
great book,
myself.
And it talks about how I love that book.
Yeah.
And I love that. I've used that expression because we all know that I've made many bets that were not on myself that have been very unsuccessful over the years. That's an understatement. So in the case, I had a beautiful situation with Monmouth Park, and we better not get off the phone before I talk about Monmouth Park for a little bit, but with Monmouth Park in Oakland, that was a phenomenal situation I had. And when Santa Anita called me, I had to just, when I got the call, the way the call started for the first minute, I thought for sure they're basically calling to offer me the job. And as the call progressed, it turned into you'll call and we're also going to bring in some other people, Michael Rona and some other people from around the world to call as well. And it turned into an audition call. But at that time, I really felt in my heart that I would win that audition and that I would get that job. And as it turned out, I didn't get the job. And you know, then I got sick, and then I had stage yep. 3 colon cancer. And I mean, you know, Richard Steele was knocking on the door. And so, for those who don't know, of course, boxing referee who stopped the Meldrick Taylor Chavez fight with 1 second to go and known for waving the arms when things are done. Anyway, by the grace of God, I was saved by my doctor here, Dr. Angelo Chinisi, and had emergency surgery. And then a few months later, another gentleman here, Dr. Miller, Dr. Vincent Miller, an absolute legend himself, got me to Memorial Sloan. They were going to take my whole colon out. I had put in an appointment to have my entire colon removed at MD Anderson Hospital in Houston. And because that's what they felt. They felt, and we did genetic testing over there. And a few weeks later, the genetic testing came back inconclusive in one particular category. Because with colon cancer, there's a certain situation that there are certain scenarios where it's just going to come back no matter what and get you. And so they wanted to, and so they were aggressive at MD Anderson in stating that, you know, they'll just take that out. You'll have your small intestine, and it was just a major, major nightmare. It sounded like, but it sounded better than the coffin. So I was going that route, and then I was able to connect with Dr. Miller through another amazing set of circumstances, and he recommended me to a gentleman named Dr. Philip Patey at Memorial Sloan, and I had that surgery. And basically, I have half a colon now. Not that your audience really wants to hear about these details, but listen, the one thing I can tell your audience that's much more important than any of this is, if you're a male and you're anywhere over 40, and I guess a female as well, you should get a colonoscopy because you just don't know, and it's hitting younger and younger people, and it's a vicious thing. But anyhow, the point of that whole sidetrack was, at that point, not getting the Santa Anita job really became, you know, quite irrelevant. I was happy to just be on the planet Earth, and I knew I'd given my best. And, you know, now I know I was actually in the middle of that thing while that, you know, disease was inside of me trying to take me out. And it was just a very stressful time, and I didn't get the job. And I actually handled that, I thought, very well, because I just, you have to accept what it is. In the end, I've come to understand from being in this business for so long that no matter how many tapes you send out, letters, resumes, people calling on your behalf, whatever it is, in the end, racetracks are going to just simply decide who they want, and they're going to get them. And as it turned out, Santa Anita called me later and offered me that job in 2018. I was obviously very surprised to get that call, and I obviously took that job. It was a childhood dream. My favorite race caller and my idol is Trevor Denman, and I always say that everything I've done in the announcing world has been inspired by his brilliance, because when he came to California in 1983, he changed it. At first, I was very skeptical. You know, I was a big Dave Johnson fan. I loved his calls, crisp, clean, amazing voice. Even his announcements were, like, beautiful. And I loved hearing him and Harry Henson. And so when a guy came in with a foreign accent, I was a bit skeptical. But very quickly, I realized that he calls the race better than anyone. And on the replay show, he became a person that would teach the audience a little bit about each horse. And he would give insight into things. And his race calls and ability to spot moves were second to none. And so it made me a bigger fan. And so the road to eventually get to Santa Anita was so incredible. And then what Johnny did for me, when I took that next move and left Golden Gate Fields, because I didn't get the Santa Anita job, so I had Monmouth and Golden Gate, and that was fine. But when the opportunity to come to Aqueduct came up, I just thought, how do you not go to New York? When New York calls, you got to go. And so I went there, and Johnny was great, and we worked together, and it was nice. And then I'd done some Belmont days, and then some, you know, the Saratoga days, and then for this to happen, it makes me very grateful, and it lets me know that I went from a guy who had a fluky, unbelievable call to Don Robbins, who got approval from the late, great R.D. Hubbard to let me call my first race in 1992. For years, everyone knew me as the impersonation guy. I know that irritated some people, and I understand. Ironically, I would be irritated listening to Rodney Dangerfield at the 16th pole if I needed some horse to get up, or Marv Albert or Jeremy Schapp or any one of these, or Snagglepuss, as I did in a couple of smaller venues like Bluegrass Town. So the interesting part is I actually pride myself today on being a no-nonsense, straight-to-the-point announcer, and I pride myself on accuracy and try to read the race. I look at each race like a Rubik's Cube. My quote-unquote action, so to speak, in every race is to try to identify and describe what is happening, and to, even though I'm an opinionated guy, to express opinion on a limited basis and not try to get carried away, but rather try to anticipate for the audience share what I'm seeing. Now, that's what it is. When the race goes off, Steve, to me, it's just me watching and sharing what I see based on the things I learned as a kid, based on my style that I've developed. And I feel that, you know, there was a guy I worked for once in sales that told me, I used to always tell him I was selling register tape coupons in Jacksonville. You know, Steve, I moved to Florida to work for the National Race Line in 1994 in order to try and, you know, get my foot in the door at a racetrack. It was an ignorant move, and they were paying me like either $8 or $9 an hour. And I remember I was making like 75 cents more than the other guys in there. And they told me, don't you dare share what, you know, your salary is, because we're paying you a little more since you're moving across the country. I sold my Mustang for $6,000. I moved to Delray Beach just to do that. And within a few weeks, I realized I can't even freeload off my buddies staying on their couch and sustain this job. And I ended up moving to Jacksonville for the same company selling register tape ads for Winn-Dixie. They made me the sales manager, and I sent tapes all across the country in early 95. And that's how I got my first break at Hialeah. They saw my tapes of my impersonation calls at Hollywood Park, and they gave me a shot to fill in 1995 when Vic Stauffer went to XR-Ben. And I called 4 days there, and the next year they offered me the job. And that's how the whole dream began. And so the impersonations were part of my whole deal, and I'm proud of them. And believe me, the fans still want them. I've never even asked Monmouth Park to do any of that, because they told me when they hired me through an interview that I wish we had a YouTube of, because I promise you, you'd be in tears laughing at that entire interview and some of the commentary. But when they hired me here in 2015 at Monmouth Park, they told me to keep it simple and to just keep it accurate. And, you know, they didn't want to hear any of that other stuff. And you know, when I'd gotten the Oakland job, it was the first big chance to call grade one races and solid opportunities. Of course, I called the grade one Super Derby at Louisiana Downs, which was my first grade one and one I'm very proud of and happy with is now. But Oakland was a big league type of thing. And you know, I wrote down the other day, I don't have it with me, but I wrote down, I think I've called it 35 tracks across the country. I've called maybe at 15 or 20 as their actual announcer and many other guest appearances in small places. That includes the 6 or 7 fairs in Northern California. But nevertheless, I've been all over the country. I've always given my heart and soul to this. And, you know, for this thing to come up at Saratoga was something. I went there for the first time in 97 when I was working as the voice of the Great Barrington Fair. And I can tell you, when I walked in there and I saw it, I could feel the aura of the place. But I never thought to myself, gee, I'd like to call races here one day, because I never even thought of that as being even a dream. And so for this to come together the way it has, it's, you know, I worked for a guy that used to say, let your performance speak. It validates that my work is worthy of these opportunities, and I'm very proud of that. And at the same time, I'm very humble, realizing that there have been jobs that I've been close to getting that I didn't get, and there have been interviews that I was told I was going to have for a very prestigious job that suddenly evaporated, and that it's very difficult for all the stars to align for these opportunities to present themselves. And the problem with this is, as an announcer, you never know if you were the second choice or if you were eased. And sometimes when you were the second choice, such as I was in 2014 at Monmouth Park, when the job came open in 2015, I just figured they'd never call me, and they did. But I've kept the blinkers on. I do the best I can every day. I'm the harshest critic of myself. I want to get better, and I know this. When I came to Saratoga for the times I did, as much as I feel like I give everything I have every day at every job I have, I know at Saratoga, the New York audience is a tough audience. I sort of adjust my style in New York. I don't give the fractional times. I'm not a big fan of giving fractional times, but I know that the New York audience has been used to that and wants that, yep. And I always give the fractions when I call in New York. And when I first went to Aqueduct, I talked to Johnny about this. I said, Johnny, what should I do? He said, you do what makes you comfortable. Don't adjust and get out of your comfort zone. But I just know they want to hear the splits. And so I do that. And the problem with the splits is you have to absolutely look away from the race in order for that to happen, either the television or the infield board. And I prefer to be looking at the horses at all times. So it's just been, you know, I'm just so grateful. I'm so thankful to so many people and all the tracks and the fans and the people. And, you know, look, God's grace for helping me through some major health problems that, you know, it's now 6 years since a major situation. Stage 3 is no joke. And it's a very tough thing to fight, and so I'm just grateful every day. And so when this opportunity comes, and I want to talk about Monmouth, not to ramble on forever with you, but, these people at Monmouth Park have been so good to me. And over the last few years, when I got Santa Anita, they've let me take some days off. And you know, Dr. Chinesi played a role in saving my life. And, you know, I talked to the people here, Bill Knopf, Bill Anderson, Dennis Drazen, all of whom very much immediately said, this is a job you have to take, and we don't look at this as anything other than, you know, good for you. Like, there wasn't any, like, hesitation, and they've paid me very well here. Not that, they've been very nice to me. These people have been incredible. And, look, at this stage of my life, coming to Monmouth Park in a quiet press box, in a beautiful environment on the Jersey Shore with the windows open for the summer, is a peaceful way of living. Saratoga, you're under the major, major, major microscope. But
it's just a challenge. I live for challenges, and I can't wait to give everything in my heart and soul to the fans of Saratoga Racecourse. I'm beyond honored and just so grateful, and I'm pretty much overwhelmed with what is happening, and I'm just very thankful and just taking it all in.
Frank Miramonte, everybody. And Frank, obviously a race call today, but you mentioned Monmouth. Quick thought, you know, and acknowledgement to Dennis and the team.
Bob Colina was here, and I remember that interview. He was in there. Bob Colina was, you know, big part of that, and I thank him because he was there, and it was his decision at that point, even though, of course, Dennis is the chairman, and nothing's going to happen without Dennis's approval, but Bob was there for me, and Bill Knopp, I sat with him. Within the first couple of minutes, I knew that that I want to work for this guy, and it was great. I, you know, the one thing about the press releases for both Chris Griffin. By the way, congratulations to Chris Griffin.
Yep.
What a beautiful appointment
tomorrow.
And well-deserved one for him. He's clean voice, just a great guy, excellent voice. You know, terrific, accurate race caller. Just a good man, and I'm so happy for him. And the way we met is an unbelievable story that we could take hours telling that story, but it's unbelievable how that's happened. But let's give a nod to the Northern California Fair Circuit, the Alameda County Fair, and all the other ones over there that have given both of us opportunities. I had a nice talk, nice text session with Larry Schwartzlander, my boss, on the fairs many years ago. He was both of our bosses, and, you know, he stood behind me during some of the worst times of my life in 2011 and 2007 and some other technical difficulties I've gone through in my time, and he was there for me, and you know, that's when you know who your friends are and who's loyal. He's a military man, and he showed what loyal military is. But I'm so happy for Chris, and you know, Monmouth Park is proving to be an extremely productive place to work. Monmouth is, I'll tell you this, this is a beautiful track, one of the best places there is, and
yep,
just a fun place, and a bunch of bosses that don't give you a hard time. They never asked me to do anything, and I just do the best I can. You know how you love Monmouth Park. You've been a big champion
sure
of this
do.
Place, and whoever lands this job is going to be a very lucky man. And Monmouth deserves to have their own guy here for the whole meet. This year we've had four different guys having to call because of adjustments and such, and they deserve the best. And believe me, they'll get a great replacement for me in here, and they'll do a good job because this is a very, very special place, Monmouth Park, and great people to work for. I can tell you that.
Frank Miramonte, everybody, and we are already, even though it's closing day at Saratoga, already looking forward to next year. Frank being on hand at the spa throughout the meet. Frank, well done. We will talk soon, and very excited for you. I know how
thank you.
Big this is and how special.
This is huge.
And how proud you
thank
should
you,
be.
My friend. You've been very kind to me, Steve, from day one. I really appreciate it. We will never be able to top being in that press box at Santa Anita that morning when it looked like a scene from some strange movie with the doors flying and the wind, and I got hit by something on the way in. I mean, that was unbelievable. That morning lives forever in my memory. But I always appreciate your support and your love of the game, and you've really given me a lot of great publicity, and I just appreciate all of it and look forward to spending more time with you next summer.
Absolutely. This winter, we'll see you. We'll see you. We'll see you in Arcadia.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Frank Miramonte, everybody, and the Mirror Man. Follow him on Twitter, and all these exciting exploits. And over the summer, you heard we got a positive update on the pizza joint in Kentucky. It's all happening. Let's stay here, and we will close out the Saratoga season. We got three visits. Let's get Hammer in real quick, Casey, if we could. Let's get Hammer's report at Kentucky Downs. There's a bunch of things that just went on in terms of the scratches, because there's two riders that created havoc with their decisions. Joel Rosario and Tyler Gaffleone both are riding at Kentucky Downs today, and so a bunch of jock changes resulted, and you're going to look at the changes, you're going to see you know, all the riding assignments shaken up. Flavien Prat picked up a few, and so did, looks like Flavien actually picked up 1, 2, 3, 4 mounts, and Dylan Davis recipient. Anyway, you're going to do, if you're somebody that crosses names out and everything, you're going to have quite a bit to keep you busy with Gaffalione. Because, you know, nobody would have, there was no way to plan for this, obviously. So after we talk to Hammer, we will get John Sadler and Seth Merrow. As mentioned, Nick tied up on his way. He's got to get to Dallas. So we can't get to Nick this morning. All right? But we will get a couple of opinions. So Hammer. Yeah, here you go, Case. Hammer. And there he comes now. Rick Hammerly, good morning.
Good morning. Steve?
Yeah.
You have me.
Okay.
I have you. Hold on. Hold on one sec. Okay. Very, very hectic morning here this morning with running. And we try not to run and enter on the same day. And so we're running now, of course, and then we're entering for the big Saturday, too. So a lot of action this morning.
Rick, bring everybody up to date, first of all, and speed. The races that were canceled on Saturday, how are they going to be the dispensation and redistributed? This entire card that was set for yesterday is being run as drawn. And then how are we for conditions and ambient scenario weather-wise?
Okay, so first of all, the Saturday card, of course, we ran seven races, and then we had to cancel because of a downpour and some lightning, which we did the right thing, and then we did the right thing by not running tomorrow yesterday. And luckily, the forecasters were wrong, and meaning we got a good day in without any rain. So that entire card from yesterday in its entirety will be run today. Starting at 12:25 Central Time. The four remaining races on Saturday, we had two stakes and two non-stakes. The two stakes will be distributed as follows. The million, the Mint Million, is going to be run next Saturday, which we are taking entries on today. And then the two-year-old race will be rescheduled for closing day, the 14th. The other two races are offered in the book in the next three or four days that we have left, so they'll just be offered as they are in the book, so they won't be brought back separately per se. So by offering that Mint Million for Saturday, we have $2 million races we're taking entries for, so that makes three, and then we have a little $1 million bonus involved that if any of the other three races were to have a grade one winner start, the purse would be elevated to $1 million. So we actually have the potential to be running five $1 million races on Saturday. So that's pretty wild. But just to get by for today, so what we've done, like I said, we got, you know, knock on wood, it didn't rain yesterday, and we're good today. So far it's cloudy. It's probably going to stay cloudy for the week, and it's just a matter of, you know, rains here, rains there. But we've taken the rail down. So all those of you who've watched on TV, we had the rail out. We had the main rail, then we had the 20-foot rail and the 40-foot rail. So we ran those other 2 days at the 40. We've taken that down, and we're at 20 feet, so we'll be on fresh grass, and the track is going to start out being labeled good.
All right.
And I'm sure the spots
that are good, you know, other spots that are a little softer, you know, it's essentially what we get at the hunt meets. It's a big old country hill.
It's a big old country hill, and, you know, they're out there working on it, rolling it, you know, doing what they do. I mean, it's kind of wild. You know, it rains. And, you know, at a normal track, that's one of the worst things to have to deal with is, you know, rain during the day. When do you take it off, if you take it off? And, of course, at a normal track or a track with two surfaces, you just know you take a couple off and you run them on the dirt. Here, when you take them off, you don't run. So that's where we were the other day. And like I said, absolutely did the right thing by doing that. And then we'll you know, carry on this week. So, like I said, it's going to be good. And, you know, look for just handicap as you would on a good anywhere.
Well, and this, yeah, look for, and particularly as we talk all the time, any time you see horses that have been successful at Kentucky Downs, you get extra points for that. But then also look, this is not the first time there's been some give in the ground, and look for those as well. The horses that, you know, that particularly, not just here, not just at Kentucky Downs, but anywhere else that have enjoyed cutting the ground. So this card, just deep and contentious. Again, we've had so much fun already with these first 2 days of racing, and there's basically capacity fields in almost every single race today. And looking forward to the three-year-old races. Any opinion at all in that Derby or Oaks?
You know what? It's been so hectic. Haven't had a chance to, you know, I think it's crazy to haven't had a chance to look. And I wanted to talk about the contest, too. So the contest...
Yeah.
Day two of our three-legged contest was going to be yesterday, and that will just move to today as well, as an entirety, same thing, same races, same everything. So that'll move to today. And as we said, it's a three-legged contest, but you don't have to play all three. So you can play independently today. If you didn't play in the first one, it's no problem. You don't have to play in the last one. But so that will be moved to today as well.
Excellent. All right. Hammer?
Yep.
I've got half an hour, not even. I got 20 minutes, not even. So we'll be packing up. We've got things pretty well organized. We'll be packing up and making our way, and we will come to everybody Wednesday from Kentucky Downs.
Yeah, we'll enjoy having you here, and we'll get three shows in from up in the booth, and we'll line up. We'll get a good lineup of guests here for sure. So, anyway, glad you're headed this way, and enjoy the races today, everybody.
Rick Hammerly, folks, away they go, and all set for Kentucky Downs today, 12:25 Central, 1:25 Eastern, and we'll see if we can't get a couple of opinions. Maybe I know Seth is listening. We're going to get to him at the end of the show, see if he's looked at the Dueling Ground Oaks and Derby. I glanced at him. You know who's potentially live in these races is Shug. He's got a player for both of these spots, I noticed. And you know, as I was kind of going through this morning, and in the girls' race, Skims, outside, and in the Derby, Oaks goes as the ninth, Derby goes as the tenth. The filly the colt is Dripping Gold, the West Point, coming off the near miss at Saratoga, going a mile and 3/16. And obviously, fitness, a big part of this. Both races are absolutely terrific. If you haven't had a chance, the boys race, one's got 11, the girls got 14. Oh no, because they that's right, because they're 12. They both have got 12. There's 14 entered in the Derby, but only 12 go. And we also have to wait and see for some scratches there, but the opportunity here, this is a really well-matched set in the two races. John Sadler is standing by, and I'm not going to say that the field for the Pacific Classic wasn't well-matched, quote-unquote. Right now, there's no match for Flightline. And John Sadler joins us after authoring as impressive a performance as a certain set of race goers and fans and horse players have ever seen. Andy Beyer earlier this morning called it historic. And John, congratulations.
Thank you so much. Good morning.
Good morning. And John, there's been actually some very interesting things said this morning while you're working and sending, you know, your sets out. Between Andy Beyer and John DeSantis, Johnny D, you know, Johnny expressed about how he knows how appreciative you must be of having a horse like this that is going to seemingly, you know, be one of, you know, one of the ones, as Johnny said, and that you particularly, given your love of the game, your love of the game's history, your horsemanship, and, you know, the way in which you've handled him to get to this point, that all of it means, not that it wouldn't mean a lot to everybody, but that he thought it was acutely appropriate that, that you got your hands on this horse this time around.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, I feel very blessed. You know, I come from a, you know, my barn has improved over the last 10, 12 years, you know that. But, I mean, I come from a, you know, solid kind of having a, you know, just hard-working horses, blue-collar horses. And so when we have this superstar like this, you know, it's really exciting.
I don't know how you can necessarily be prepared to expect a performance like that. It is certainly those workouts. And Jay Pribman specifically had been just agog over watching him prepare for this spot. But again, you just can't really be anticipating that kind of effort unless you thought that there was potential for it.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things you got to look at is he ran a mile at Belmont 33-3 with trouble on a, you know, a demanding New York track. So, you know, that kind of projects to a two-turn mile, they're going to be a little slower. So if you could have said you think he'll be 34 and change, you know, you can kind of get there, because you figure if he runs a mile that easily, you know, he's not going to run the last quarter in 26. That's not this horse. So you can kind of get to the numbers, you know, on the clock, and then, but visually, you know, and the panache he did it with, that's remarkable.
Talk about you know, the trip and watching, and you know, this is one of those, you know, hair raising on arms, back of the neck, you know, tingling type visuals when you see the kinds of things that are, you know, people, the way they reacted in the immediate aftermath. But talk about, you know, you watching it and Jane Lyon and the team and the whole experience.
That was great. You know, I was so happy to see, you know, my instructions were for him not to overthink it, you know, to give him, you know, just put him where he's clean, you know, whether that may lay second or first, as long as he gets in a rhythm, you know, I thought that's really what I want to see. So I felt good right off the bat. Took a little bump at the start, but then you saw he kind of kept him wide on purpose, you know, that's so he probably wouldn't pull very much. So he, you know, as he goes around the turn, and you could almost tell that going down the backside, you know, it was lights out.
We talked that after, you know, we talked after all these efforts. I mean, he's clearly becoming, you know, even more dangerous, right? For him to, you know, to relax and come to Flavian's hands the way he's doing, you know, it's not as if he needs to just run everybody off their feet right now.
No, and you know, some people are, you know, they're looking for, well, what do we call him, because he only has five. You know, I mean, hopefully there's, you know, the history will be written. You know, this isn't a finished product. You know, this is the start of a very brilliant horse, and you know, things will be, you know, it's constantly evolving. I think the main thing is what you see over the last
you know, in this year, in 2022, is how well he's relaxing, you know. You know, how well he relaxed in New York when things didn't go his way. And if you saw any of his workouts going to the Pacific Classic, he was very relaxed, you know. I even got a little, some comments. I worked him, when I worked him from the gate, just to sharpen him up from the gate, he kind of laid another, went with another horse, and everybody's like, well, that other horse worked really good. Well, you know, the idea of the work was designed to get him to relax with another horse, not be, you know, when the training's not to, you know, crush your opponents. It's about what you want to get done.
Johnny asked a germane question, John, and he wanted that he basically was inviting me to ask you, and I don't think we actually did discuss this. At what point along the way and upon delivery did you, and of course, you know, the horse gets started in the operation, but at what point, you know, did you really say to yourself, my God, this is as great a talent as I've had my hands on, and there's no telling what this horse could do?
Well, they called me from Ocala before I ever arrived and said they got goosebumps. They said they hadn't got goosebumps like that since Zenyatta left. So that was a good point of reference. And the first time we breezed them at Santa Anita, I looked at Juan, I said, that's the best horse you've ever ridden. You know, so he's never hit his talent. You know, so we knew he was special from day one. You could even see it in his gallops before we breezed him the first time.
The care and maintenance, John, because, you know, we have discussed, which is having to handle him as deliberately as you have. And I thought one of the, I imagined one of the positives out of this was that if anybody had misunderstood or didn't really understand why it was so important to handle him the way you've been handling him, because if a horse has got this kind of ability in him and this kind of power, I mean, they're, you know, essentially a danger to themselves every time they leave the stall. And frankly, they're a danger to themselves in the stall.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I mean, the thing you would say is, you know, if you look at people that look at the numbers and things like that, they're going to say this horse is too fast.
Yes, exactly.
So, I mean, you know, who can sustain that? So the idea is to be very, you know, like you said, judicious or careful or whatever, not where you're not looking for a challenge, but, you know, you can't take that Porsche out day after day after day. You know, he has to be doled out.
Well, it's been doled out five times, and in an afternoon, and it has been just devastating at every turn. Victories of 13 plus, 12 plus, 11 plus, 6 plus, and 19 plus lengths for Flightline. And John, there actually was nothing but nice things that kind of emanated from this post cool out. The opportunity that he will, you know, obviously will press into the fall, but a chance to see him in 2023. How do you anticipate getting to the Breeders' Cup right now?
He'll go back to the track this week. Do a little light training here at Del Mar. He'll ship up probably in 7 days. I'll be in Kentucky for a week. And then we'll come back and train him a little bit at Santa Anita and then figure our plan out for October, you know, getting into the Breeders' Cup. But the spacing is good. You know, we're looking forward to the next race.
And beyond that? I mean, if everything continues to, you know, if all the
yeah, I mean, well, you know,
move
we,
on smoothly?
You know, I had to talk to the partners a little bit, you know, last weekend or even yesterday. You know, we're not going to decide anything until we get there, you know. So, you know, we'll make any decision about what's next after the Breeders' Cup.
Well, there was hints, though, that
that we have an open mind. I mean, that's what we're looking at.
Well, for the ownership team, of course, I mentioned Jane Lyon, who bred Flightline and who is you got that. It's going to be very interesting at Keeneland next Tuesday, John, to see what the Curlin version out of Feathered fetches.
Yeah, I saw the pictures. It looked pretty good.
Well, for Costa and for the Aronis family and Sienna and Jane and West Point, I mean, everybody had to be. I actually heard, I got a wonderful email from a West Point partner who's in on Flightline and who wants to donate to the real players inside the backstretch to help their cause here in Saratoga and New York. But this was something, John, that I'm sure those in attendance and even those of us that, you know, were just watching across the country and around the world, the excitement over this. I mean, what kind of comments have you received out of curiosity?
What do you mean? What kind of did I? Everybody's thrilled
from people, you know, from other horsemen and you know.
Everybody gets it. No, it's been marvelous. I was thinking, you know, I spent a lot of time yesterday thinking about how I felt. And, you know, I'm going, you know how I felt? I felt like the designated driver. You know, I'm the one that can't go off the deep end, you know? I got to be I wanted to be
the
Mr.
Responsible,
you know,
party.
Tugging champagne, but I'm the designated driver. That's my role. So this doesn't mean the designated driver can't have fun, but you know, we got to get everybody home first.
No, well, that's well framed. That's well framed, John. I should also mention, you know, because we didn't talk last week, but Edgeway with a nice performance in the Rancho Bernardo.
I was so thrilled with that. I thought that was one of the best races in the summer. You know, that mare that she ran second to her, you know, she'd been in the Southwest, but, you know, what's she, like 10 out of 12? Really a tough, tough mare. Ran a very fast race over this track. And I just thought that was an exceptional horse race. I really loved that race. And, you know, Edgeway's, you know, she's got her own beautiful record, you know, 8 out of 13. You know, ran a good number. She's going to be good for Keeneland. So I was really happy with her. She's a personal favorite of mine. So I thought it was great. Great race.
Are we, one last one, we going to win today with either Kirsten Bosch or Big Hopes or both?
Both.
Both. Talking both. Trash. I love it. There you go, folks. There's your push. Second race today, Kirschenbach with Juan Hernandez, and then Juan rides Big Hopes in the generous portion. Lots of Big Hopes associated with Flightline going forward. John, thanks so much.
All right, take care.
John Sadler, everybody. John W. Sadler, if you're following John on Twitter, which is an option. We didn't get to Seth. I hate that I cut him off here at the end, but thanks to everybody. John Sadler and Hammer, Frank Miramati, Johnny D., Phil Serpy, Smiling Phil, and Andrew Beyer. There you go, folks. Enjoy the Labor Day action, and we'll be somewhere tomorrow. I might be at Presque Isle broadcasting tomorrow. That makes actually some sense. That may actually happen. But I'll come to you from either Ashtabula or Erie or somewhere, all right, on the road to Kentucky Downs. Analysis is up. I don't think there's been – I'll check the scratches. I think we're free and clear for the last card of the Saratoga season. Tomorrow, we'll look forward to Colonial, the Oaks and Derby, Virginia Oaks and Derby, and much, much more. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you in the morning.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Thoroughbred horse racing is back in Virginia as Colonial Downs conducts its More Racing, More Money summer season presented by Woodford Reserve. An early week racing schedule and average daily purses of $625,000. The 9-week meet runs from July 11th.